building the fashion businesses of the future together. Welcome to the Future of Fashion Business. The Future of Fashion Business is about helping aspiring fashion entrepreneurs and designers start their own successful fashion brands by learning from the best, most experienced people in the industry. I am your host, Esteban Julian. For more advice and to learn more about how I started my own fashion brand, make sure you follow my fashion journey on YouTube at Esteban Julian. Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of The Future of Fashion Business. I am your host, Esteban Julian. Now, in this week's episode, I sat down with fashion entrepreneurs and co-founders of Hedoin, Alexander Timon and Anna Ronch. Now, this is an episode specially made for startup brand or fashion entrepreneurs. And why is that? I wanted to get somebody like Anna and Alex to share their experience, exactly how it was like to actually start a fashion business. Now, Hedoin is a startup fashion brand. So Anna and Alex still are very involved in the whole building process. They go through a lot of challenges, and they've gone through a lot of challenges that maybe you guys are going through in their own, you know, in their own, your own fashion brand startup experience or corporate experience. So I think it would be very important to have a new fresh insight on what those challenges are, the biggest ones that they experienced when starting their own successful fashion company, how did they approach those troubles, those mistakes, how did they solve them, and what were the biggest lessons that they learned along the way. Now, problems in business is something that I'm sure you guys hear all the time happen constantly. It's something that you guys have to get used to, and the fashion industry is no exception. It is a constant firing sort of machine. You always have to put fires out. You always have to keep worrying about how to solve certain issues. So having people like Anna and Alex just really share exactly how they solve, how they approach these issues, how they approach this whole experience is something that is really going to help you guys adapt to what's coming if you're starting a fashion brand and prepare for the exciting experience that it's going to be, because you're definitely not going to be bored. That's for sure. Now, that being said, let's get into this week's episode. And that's it. Again, 6 months afterwards, or after my initial contact, we finally made this happen.
Yes, it took us a while, but good things. How do you say that in English?
It took the coronavirus to make this happen, pretty much. that's how much it took.
We needed to be locked into a room for us to actually spend time on this. Yes, glad we finally made it.
Well, thank you, of course, for being here today. I'm very excited about this chat. I'm very excited about this one in particular. I'm sure we're going to cover a lot of very interesting things. And yeah, very happy to have you on, both of you, of course.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So just to start off, and I mean, feel free to organize it however you want. I'm sure you guys will have different but very similar perspective on how this happened. But what's the story behind Hedoin? How did it all happen? How did you guys meet each other? I don't know. Just give us the story. People are interested.
Yeah, sure. So we're both in our 30s. We both grew up in Germany, and that's also where we met during our first jobs in Frankfurt. I was in banking, Alex was in consulting, and throughout my time in banking, and Alex had a very similar experience in her job, we just went through hundreds, if not thousands, of tides. The daily struggle was real, and yeah, wearing tights is just a real problem. So started like asking around all my friends about their tides, what brands they were, what annoyed them. The annoying things about tights list was basically the same for everyone. They sag, they itch, they eat into your skin, they leave pressure marks, and they shine through the dresses. And I mean, the nude colors have clearly not been derived from real human beings. But most of all, they just break so easily. Sometimes even just by looking at them. And we heard the funniest stories from, you know, how do you fix your tights, from, you know, the classic nail polish trick to hairsprays to wearing two pairs of tights and wearing panties on top of your tights so they don't sag, and, you know, having a spare one in your bag or in your drawer at work. That was the tight story, but I think Alex can go a little bit deeper into the brand idea as well.
Yeah, because it was not only the problem around tight, so it was the combination of various conversation we had on brands as well. And we said it's funny how we know so many really successful, cool and fun and driven women, but can't really name so many brands that represent exactly that persona without being too serious or too girly or too whatever stereotype you can think of. And from that, we actually started thinking of, if we were to create a brand, what kind of products we'd like to create. So, and we knew we don't have to reinvent the wheel, basically, because there's a few products out there that you use in your daily life that haven't seen innovation in many, many years. And this is how everything started, because tights was number one most annoying things. We talked to a lot of women we knew, asked ourselves, why do they break so easily, etc. And this is when we started researching and basically started the whole journey.
Amazing. And was your initial approach a lot more focused on the product or on the brand? Or were you able to build on those two things simultaneously?
I would say it was both, definitely both. So the brand was always very important to us. And even things like the name, it took us over 2 months to really find a name that we were satisfied with. Yeah. Because it was important.
Things can take a little longer.
It was very important to us to capture the persona of the woman we have in mind with the name, and not just say super tight, for example. So the brand was equally important. Obviously, we had the ambition to create the best product, but it was equally important throughout, or from day one, basically.
Amazing. And I mean, this is kind of an odd, it's not a common scenario for this to happen. I'm guessing not only did that take place perfectly, but I'm guessing you guys are also very compatible with each other, because I mean, the only way you're going to have a startup focusing on both product and brand at the same time is if you have a partnership of some sort. Because if not, I mean, there's just not enough time in the world and skills to be able to allocate and do that successfully from the very beginning, right?
I think when you start a company, one thing that's very important is that you complement each other in the journey. So I think on paper, we look very similar, similar background, etc. But when it came to execution, what things, you know, do we thrive for? What do we enjoy? It came very naturally. I come more from the operations tech infrastructure space, innovation, building little new things and optimizing, you know, whatever I get into my hands, I try to optimize everything. And Alex is very strong on, you know, anything numbers, fundraising, strategy. And I always say the world lost a great author with her not writing her books yet, but she's gathering all the memoirs already.
Amazing. And how did you guys meet each other? Was it both in the banking industry, right?
Yeah, so we met in Frankfurt during our first job. So Anna was in banking, I was in consulting. And this is how we got to know each other, and always had the drive or the ambition to found our own business at some point.
And was it a mixture of ambition and passion and curiosity for the industry, or you guys are more motivated by just opportunity and solving problems?
the tricky one. I think both, to some extent.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really fixing a problem, finding or founding, starting a brand that really captures, you know, the humor, the pictures, the vision, like everything around it. So if you, for example, look at visuals, you know, what we're aiming for is, you know, showing an attitude, showing that little smirk, that, you know, a little dark humor in everything we do. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, the copy that we write or the emails or anything that you see out there. Mm-hmm. But with that, you know, it's that persona in the first place, that mm-hmm. brand, but, you know, giving her the essentials that she needs to elevate her and to celebrate her.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Amazing. So you guys based your customer persona on your own personalities? Initially, of course.
Yeah, pretty much so. And I would say in that respect, it really helps to actually be that similar. So as Anna said, on paper, probably very, very, or even too similar, which in fact is not the case, luckily. But from the characteristics everything the brand represents, if that's coming really from yourself and the people you're surrounded by, then that makes things just so much easier.
Mm-hmm. It was very self-reflective, actually, when we did our mind maps and, you know, brainstorms on the name, on, you know, what are the characteristics on, you know, who is she, what does she like, who is she overall? And it was funny because we were writing down all those words and it was really a reflection of us and the women around us. It was great.
That's amazing. And that's actually the smartest way to go about it initially, when you don't have any market feedback, solid market feedback, to know exactly who to build your brand around, what type of customer, what type of persona. So definitely, I think it's definitely the most approach, because you know yourself better than anybody. And if you have a problem that needs solving, most likely there's going to be people out there that have the exact same problem. They're going to be able to relate with you. It's just a matter of reaching those people. Now, when you guys started having solid customer feedback through, you know, sales or surveys or whatever, did you notice your customer persona shifting or evolving a little bit, or it just reinforced the fact that it was more like you that you ever imagined, like what you initially thought about?
I would say the core target group is exactly that persona. Mm-hmm. And obviously you also have a wider group of customers that you wouldn't necessarily, like the profiles, you wouldn't necessarily think of. Let's put it that way. But the core is exactly what we imagine it to be.
Mm-hmm. Right. Amazing.
We receive a lot of customer feedback and things that people post. It often has that dark humor and the wit and the drive. And so this is where we see, okay, we obviously made things or the brand value is pretty clear.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. So did you guys ever have any sort of challenge with product market fit, or it was very natural, very organic as the company and the brand evolved? As for finding potential customers for your brand?
I think it came very naturally, because we see, for us as women, we know who wears tights in their everyday life, right? So mm-hmm. it can be any industry, any city, any country. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to, you know, us in banking consulting, of course, but, you know, it can be a stewardess, it can be someone in hospitality, it can be, you know, any woman out there. And what we've experienced over time, that a lot of women say, hey, I'm not wearing dresses and skirts and tights because, you know, tights are the issue. Mm-hmm. So if we can fix that problem, you know, like it's a wonderful thing. And for me, it was always important to, have a product. If you sit in the office or you know, as a doctor or whoever you are, and you have tights that have a very thin waistband and they really eat into your skin. It's just so uncomfortable, and I'm not even sure it's very healthy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, creating a product that's very comfortable that you can wear over hours and hours, and that really, you know, you can rely on.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Yeah, and if you have such a clear vision of your brand, then things such as what Anna mentioned, where is that woman? You pretty quickly know what kind of cities to target, with what kind of channels, with what kind of messaging. Because basically, if you like it, if the teams likes it, then a fellow heroine out there will like it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're just replicating something that already exists in yourself and in your small sort of, I guess, relatable community.
Yeah, we understand her lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing, man. There's so many questions that I want to ask based on, because the biggest reason why I wanted to get you guys here is because I think people that are very evolved in their careers, I've had a lot of executives, a lot of very evolved entrepreneurs in here that, you know, they went through the challenges, they were successful and everything, but you know, you forget over time about the initial challenges, you know, just because it's human nature to do so. And I wanted to get somebody like you guys that have been through pretty much the first rush, the roughest batch, that already, quote unquote, made it through the first stage of actually the challenges and the sort of challenging experience that opening up a fashion brand is actually about. So I think that you guys can bring a lot of new, fresh insight to those potential challenges, what they are, what to actually do about them. So that can people have the right expectations, you know, for people that are very recently going through the same exact process that they are, and that offer an amazing product and an amazing brand, just like you guys are doing. But I really want to know what to focus on, because I mean, I'm sure you guys had problems all over the place, from product development problem. I mean, because it's just part of the process, but I want to focus on maybe operational problems, since that seems to be most of what you guys are really, really good at. And also brand problems. Now, what would you say from a brand perspective, and this might be a question maybe more for Alex than for Anna, that you guys had initially? Or was brand something that was pretty much a lot easier than operations and product development and hiring and so on and so forth?
If I'm really honest, I think brand was never really an issue.
Amazing.
Because it came just so naturally. Mm-hmm. Obviously, throughout, you know, all these months, you just need to go with your gut and your intuition. Mm-hmm. And don't get distracted, and don't go down path where you already know is actually not true to the brand, because mm-hmm. it will not work. And if you know that, then there's no point trying.
Yeah.
We did that, for example, we're like, hey, it might not match the brand 100%, but
whatever. Let's do it.
It looks like a very promising idea. Let's do it. And then obviously the results were as expected.
Flops.
Yeah, luckily we did that only once, and then we was like, no, we just go with our gut, and it's gonna be fine.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think the step that some people skip when they start a company, they just see the product, they just want to sell it, and that's it. I think the key step, the fundament of every brand and company, is really getting that vision and mission and the core values together, mm-hmm. and you know, really have a document where this is all documented, from how do visuals look like, tone of voice, etc., very, very much in detail, summing up, you know, different words that summarize the brand, and always come back to that when you have to make a decision.
Amazing. And yeah, I'm glad you guys had a soothing experience with branding, because this will change from time to time, and it's very specific to the startup, right? And to every founder has different issues. I think it's important for people to understand the variables that are involved in building a company and the variables that might go wrong when starting a company. Some people might experience something like you guys, where brand was very easy. but some others will just have massive issues with brand. People just don't really resonate with it. And it's important to understand that it's normal to have certain issues in certain aspects. But most importantly, that every company is different. And this is just merely a guideline for you to have some solid resources on what to do on certain situations. Now, backing out a little bit, because it was a question that I also wanted to ask you, but kind of forgot to ask you at the very beginning, was what due to your background, because I think you guys have very, very interesting backgrounds, what would you say were the biggest skills that you brought to the table because of your background when you started in the fashion industry? The ones that you were like, man, I'm so glad I have this because of what I did before.
PowerPoint and Excel.
Pretty much. Numbers.
I'm just joking.
But numbers. Numbers.
That's going to motivate our viewers.
No, it's definitely a deep understanding for numbers and being very analytical. Mm-hmm. So that helped us a lot. And I would say it also helped a lot to not come from the industry.
I agree.
Yeah, it has some benefits, really.
I agree 100%. I agree 100%. I mean, fashion is such an emotional industry that is full of emotional decision making. And although intuition is healthy in a lot of senses, especially when you're dealing with branding and creativity, when it comes to rational decision making, I mean, there's nothing like learning how to analyze number and make decision based on what the numbers are telling you. So that's why I asked that question specifically, because someone with your background probably might have the other issue on the other hand, which is you guys cannot not go by rationality and numbers, et cetera, right?
I think there's two elements to this, right? I mean, you try very creative stuff at some point, and you have visuals, et cetera, that you send out ads or, you know, whatever you do, there is always a creative part around it, mm-hmm. but there's also a very analytical part. Mm-hmm. So analyzing the data behind it is very, very important. Otherwise, you know, you might, you know, emotionally you think something's very pretty, but, you know, does it bring the business, the product, the team somewhere? So analyzing the data behind it, mm-hmm. Is very, very important. And I think that's what both of us learned throughout our careers, you know, working for big, large organizations where everything has to be, has a strategy, a structure, etc. So knowing where it needs to go at some point, but, you know, still being creative around things, but mm-hmm. yeah, just getting those two pieces together is very important. And I assume some people might struggle on focusing on one or the other, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree 100%.
I also think we've seen the best results where we really dare to just go with our gut.
Mm-hmm.
And, or situations where we wouldn't even know the rules and just said, but this is how we think it should be done. And mm-hmm. it feels right to the brand, feels right to the product. And this is when really like things progress.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. And have you found those decisions to be in a specific area of the business, like maybe marketing wise or design wise or branding wise, or have you found that it applies in all multiple disciplines of the business? Like that intuitive decision making.
Yeah, I'd say that's definitely or mostly brand and marketing.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot because I mean, accounting, you don't want to go by your gut on. Yeah, I think I made more money this month than last month. I'm probably fine, you know?
And I think that's the thing. We were worried that, you know, some investors, for example, might think, oh, you know, they don't know anything about fashion, but at the end of the day, you're running a company. So having accounting knowledge, having, you know, the knowledge of how to run a business, how to hire people, interview people, manage people, those are things that you learn, you know, through, you know, your career and life, and bringing all this knowledge into a company where, yes, we do fashion, but a lot of the things we do And this is why I was laughing about PowerPoint and Excel. You know, a lot of things that we do is still document in your models and in your sheets, right? And it's not, I mean, the end result that the customer sees is a picture and is copy, reads copy, or is an email, but you know, everything behind it is
not really glamorous.
It's really data driven.
Yeah.
In our case.
Amazing. Wow. That's very, very interesting. Now, when it comes to your decision-making process, and I'm asking you guys specifically because of your background, because I sort of understand the banking and the consulting industry superficially. So do you have sort of like a checklist for your decision-making process? Because I asked this specifically because I have banking friends that, for example, when they're making decisions, they literally have a step-by-step process of, okay, this is what I have to consider. Is this a check? Then this happens. Is this a check? And that's how they pretty much make decisions. I mean, the most rational thing I've ever heard in my life. But do you guys have a...
We are not that extreme. No, not at all.
Yeah. And in a startup, also, there is no checklist or a handbook, right? Everything that we do, we're probably one of the first ones or the first ones to do certain things. So there is no manual to it. And a lot of times you can't really ask anyone. So decisions that we make, yes, common sense. And yes, you know, rely on your gut feel. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, not a checklist per se.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. And it's not really healthy to be that way in a startup because you'll go insane. Now, I'm sure, I mean, natural process of a startup, of opening a company, any company, specifically a fashion business, it's all about putting fires out all the time. But was there any particular very big fires that you guys recall from starting this whole thing? I mean, I'm sure there's three problems that you guys are like, man, was that a pain in the ass when we started? Because, you know? I mean, every day there's something, but there's a couple. And
where do we start?
Exactly. Anna, the stage is yours. Because Anna went through a lot last year, but I let you tell the story.
So there is a reason why it took us 6 months to get together. So the tech and operations space is an interesting industry. So it all started back then when we were like, hey, what shop system do we use? And so, you know, we went back and forth. We actually started on, you know, Shopify, then went to another one and then came back to Shopify because we realized, well, that's actually the big thing to do. Mm-hmm. But even Shopify has been out there for, you know, many years. You know, there's still a lot of limitations.
Branding mostly, right?
And counter over time. So we onboarded a second fulfillment center because Brexit was coming up, and thought it's again, you know, our two biggest markets, Germany and UK. And so we have backup fulfillment center to ship our German clients directly from Germany. So we tested everything, went through, you know, a big process of analyzing everything in the back, testing everything went well. And luckily, we just hired Emily.
Mm-hmm. Operations manager, I'm guessing.
Yeah, she's our operations manager. So we turned off the second fulfillment center. It was just a disaster. I mean, it was a nightmare.
Yeah.
I mean, Emily came to me. She's like, Anna, I'm like, she was so high. It was fun. It was fun to some extent, but if you look at it, it was actually a disaster. So everything went downhill. We couldn't, like, we had duplicate deliveries. We couldn't track the inventory. Mm-hmm. The orders weren't coming in properly. It was chaos. So the first week of her life at 808, she was basically just fighting fires. But I mean, bottom line, key takeaways.
Yeah.
You know, react quickly. So we pulled the trigger after 3 weeks. We got all our stock back into our key fulfillment center here in the UK. Mm-hmm. Have a fallback plan if you do stuff like big stuff like that, you know, always have that option to go back in case it is a disaster.
Yeah, assume worst case scenarios constantly. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And listen, I mean, we usually have our best and worst case scenario when we plan things, right? But then, you know, you think it can't get any worse, and then COVID-19 happened. So,
yeah. And that's amazing advice, because I mean, to be honest with you, as an entrepreneur, I hear people giving the like specific advice on this sort of thing, like I don't know, well, this happened and then you do this. But the thing is that, I mean, it's just people don't really understand until they start an entrepreneurial venture the amount of problems that, I mean, it's overwhelming. Because, you know, you hear people, oh, adapt to problems or learn from your mistakes or whatever. You know, you hear that all the time. But it does not give the amount of problems enough credit. Like, there's going to be problems all the time. And you're going to mess up big time no matter what you do.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, yeah. In your case, it was operations because of, you know, the sort of change that you guys did. But it could have been anything else, you know?
But it's those small little things. I mean, Shopify is like one of the number one tools out there, right? It has limitations. There's a lot of number one apps that you install to your Shopify to do certain things. I mean, one of the worst moments in my life where my heart really went through the roof, one morning we wake up and we're wondering why the sales were fairly low. Mm-hmm. And then we realized that the checkout didn't work anymore. Wow. You sit there. And
were you guys with Shopify when that happened?
But the thing was, it wasn't Shopify itself. It was an app that we installed the night before, which we tested, and everything worked well.
Jesus.
Until the last step of the checkout, where you click it and the click works, but the step after didn't work. So basically our clients were texting us, hey, you know, I was trying to check out, but I couldn't. And that's the reason why we found out, you know, that, you know, something was wrong. So we're getting rid of that app straight away. But, you know, those are the moments where, you know, it is an app that's on Shopify that's really available. Mm-hmm. But even if you just install it and it's there, it doesn't mean that it's going to work. Mm-hmm. Tech is fun.
Mm-hmm.
It never gets boring.
Oh no, definitely. That's not. I mean, if you're a guy, your hair will probably start falling off. That's for sure. now, I do want to. Do you think the nature of this particular problem, for example, happened because of your lack of maybe expertise in that particular area, or because you didn't have the right maybe team build around it, or do you think it was just an inevitable part of growing the company? Looking back, of course.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you think, well, if we had someone on board, who knows, but then you start working with pros and similar things happen. So I think especially in that space where every app or every, you know, tech solution is very unique. Mm-hmm. Even if you have an expert on board, it doesn't mean that they're going to know that particular system and how it's going to integrate into your system.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, for me, and that was one very important thing when, you know, starting a company, that you go through all the different stages, that you do customer service yourself, that, you know, you're involved in every single process down the route, so that you know what the roles is that you need to hire for, what their work is going to be, and that you understand what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you understand it enough to be able to identify somebody that's way better than you. Okay. At that, pretty much. Which, again, it in itself is also probably the biggest, probably another biggest issue that I'm sure you guys struggled with, because everybody struggles when finding creative or any sort of talent for the business, right? Or was it not a big problem for you finding those people?
It took a while, definitely. So, or let's put it that way, we took our time.
Very smart.
We really needed them. But if we were not 100% convinced, we would rather say, okay, let's start the whole process from scratch, mm-hmm. and just stay up longer, do it ourselves, continue working weekends. It's fine. We've been doing that for quite a while, so it doesn't matter now anymore. Right. Like a few more weeks, it's fine.
More years.
But the most important thing, I think, is to have a team that really breathes the brand, and that really is, yeah. You need this cultural fit in the beginning, especially.
Agreed.
So, if you see a great candidate, but you somehow feel that's not a good fit, mm-hmm. Then there is no point really. So we say, let's just continue looking. So, but then if you find those people, you will have the most incredible team. Mm-hmm. And we've been very, very lucky with our team, and it's so easy to work together. Mm-hmm. We enjoy that through and through.
It's really good energy, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. I completely understand what you guys mean. I mean, I think a good way to describe a team and having a good team around you is that the problems are always there, you know, but the experience going through those problems and solving them improves, I mean, exponentially. But then, this is why I'm very surprised, if you hire the wrong people, or I guess a better way of putting it is if you hire the people that are not perfect for that, or very highly compatible with the company and what you guys do, the experience just goes way worse than it was before. I guess that's the most realistic way I can describe it as somebody that went through that process as well.
Yeah, and you spend so much time together. So, it really helps if there's a good cultural fit.
Mm-hmm. 100%. I'm very surprised that you're disciplined in the hiring process. I mean, people always messed it. I messed it up so hard so many times. I still do. So, I mean, because, what happens to everybody is, you know, problem appears. Entrepreneur tries to find person that can solve that problem. Due to urgency and not having enough time to solve the problem, entrepreneur hires the wrong person. Problem escalates 100 times because of that decision, you know. So I'm very shocked that you guys made that, you know, decided to take your time from the very beginning. It takes a lot of emotional
I think we both went through plenty of interviews and assessment centers ourselves. And I remember when we decided to go on that journey together, the two of us, we did so many psychological tests together as well, be it the Myers-Briggs or, you know, and any other, and really reflected and talked about it. And with, you know, every person that comes on board, I mean, it doesn't affect our decision whether we hire them or not, but I think it's important that you know, everybody knows everybody's Myers-Briggs test, for example, so that you know how to communicate and how to work together, which is, you know, one of the key things. Sometimes you work, or it doesn't have to be in a workspace, but you live with someone or talk to someone, you just don't get each other and you don't understand why. And sometimes if you understand those nuances and psychology behind it, it makes it so much easier to interact with each other.
Yeah.
I also think that it really helped to read other founders' stories or listen to podcasts, etc. And even like then if you're in a situation where, you know, like I really need that person, but I just can't find someone right now who is, you know, a great fit, skill wise and cultural wise, then what do? You might either hire them anyway, or just start the process again. And then hearing about all the mistakes others did and how much they did regret it in the end. Well, why do the same mistake then?
Mm-hmm. Of course. Oh, very interesting. What personalities do you guys have now that we're talking about Myers-Briggs? That's something that I'm interested in.
Sure. Great, Anna.
I mean, I'm gonna guess. I'm guessing Anna is an INTJ.
Close.
Mm.
Well, close. I am borderline ENTJ, ENTP.
Okay. What about you, Alex?
Have a guess.
Man, I have no idea. Let's see.
I'm ENTJ as well.
ENTJ, yeah, I would have said something extra for sure. And two ENTJs working together, that's something out of this world, probably.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, talk about once in a lifetime sort of partnership. I mean, if the listeners don't know what we're talking about, they should. Like, if you're an entrepreneur, you got to do the Myers-Briggs. You got to take personality tests. I mean, you need to have some self-awareness. You need to know what you're good at, you know? That's very interesting. I share that with you as well. I struggle with the extroversion and introversion part because I've worked on my extroverted skills so much that I think I, like, the personality test think I'm an extrovert, but naturally I'm super, super introverted. I'm actually, I think I'm INTJ. I always come up something like that. So I really like you guys.
That's interesting because I kind of felt when we started the journey, because you work so much and, you know, you work on so many amazing things and it's just, it absorbs your life, but you want to be in it and it gives you energy, but you kind of, I felt that I moved from the extrovert more into the introvert piece.
Mm-hmm.
But naturally, not because, you know, it was horses, right?
So yeah, yeah.
You spent more time on the business and, you know, with your team and with your business partner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And going through those transitions kind of drives you crazy, right? Psychologically. Because you start reflecting on, hey, who am I truly? You know, is this the real me?
The other one that we did was Crystal Knows, which does a few tests with you and gives you a list of, in a meeting, those are the five things you should know about the other person. I mean, me and Alex, we were cracking up. It was so on point, even though we're both ENTJs, there's certain things where, you know, when you go into a meeting with Anna, you know, you better have more time. Whereas Alex, she goes into the meeting, you better be prepared. You know, you have your 5 minutes and, you know, it needs to be everything planned out. And I'm more there like, la, la, la.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Man, that's
knowing those things, it was funny to know, but knowing that about all your stuff and the people you work with.
Yeah, it's funny when you see that in on paper.
Yeah, of course.
Anyway, yeah,
that's very set goals for respective people, right? If you know that there are certain things that draw their energy, you know, find tasks that, you know, A, of course, elevate their expertise, but also that, you know, give them energy and to become, you know, better and stronger in what they do.
Yeah, of course. You learn how to manipulate the environment to work for certain personalities and to understand if they are actually compatible from a rational perspective, not only from an intuitive perspective. Because when it comes to people, it's very weird, right? Like, the more you understand people, or you at least the more you think you understand people, because you never really do, the more important intuition becomes, the more you rationally understand them, right? Because I found that I thought that something like working with people was going to slowly become more rational, something that I could understand how to do. But the more, I guess, experience I had with it and the more rational understanding of the process I had, the more I understood that intuition was even more important in those cases, which was kind of a funny
sort of contrast or opposite idea. You know, I don't know if guys have sort of found that to be true in your case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Mm-hmm. Right, because it's an interesting idea. Sort of a natural process of you know, experience evolution from an entrepreneurial perspective. But anyway, I'm getting a lot. I'm very, very philosophical here. I'm gonna cut it back a little bit. People are not gonna be able to relate with what I'm saying.
That's probably what Kristen knows will tell about you.
Awesome. Well, I mean, damn, we're already past the we're almost at the hour mark, so I think we're gonna have to wrap this all up soon. Man, there's so many other things that I wanted to talk about, but I think we've covered the most important basics. I think that it's awesome to have somebody with your background that only had the passion for problem solving and the passion for the industry to figure out that, you know, it was possible. I think it served as a very good warning for some that are trying to start a business and motivation for some that are trying to start a business, because I think that you guys provided a very real sort of insight on what actually starting a business is all about. Now, last question, and this one is going to be hard because it's always the hardest one. It might take you a couple of seconds to think about it, and you guys can help each other out if you want. But if you guys could go back to when you were starting out, what would be the best piece of advice that you'd give yourselves or each other, and why?
I would say I'd go back in time. I'd tell myself that it's okay to rely on your gut, especially when you're actually really analytical and rational person.
Yeah, this comes from a banker, guys.
And like, it is okay, and your gut is always right. Trust it. Yeah, yeah. And also that you know your business better than anyone else, and you'll realize along the way that nearly everyone has advice for you, mm-hmm. If you like it or not. But know what advice to listen to. And frankly speaking, also know what to ignore.
Amazing. Wow. What a great piece of advice. What about you, Anna?
So my mom always told me to think before I talk. Mm-hmm. So on that one and on many other points, she was right. Mm-hmm. So here's to moms always being right. And listen to your mom. But when it comes to decisions, decision-making in a startup, that's sometimes a different story where you have to think and react quickly. Mm-hmm. So again, as Alex said, listen to your gut feel. You know, if you have an idea, get started. Don't think of all the things that might go wrong, because that attracts the wrong energy and the law of attraction, it will go wrong then. So if something goes wrong, fix it and move on. So one thing that I always tell myself and my friends when, you know, dealing with big problems is, and I think I'm quoting Tim Ferriss here, you always suffer more in your imagination than in real life, mm-hmm. Which is true so many times. So whatever it is, you know, face it, fix it, and get over it.
Amazing. Yeah, that's the best attitude to go for. No, I loved it. I think both advice is really, really good. Well, that pretty much concludes this episode. I do want to really thank you for coming on and sharing all of that with us. Working people that might be interesting on what you guys are doing with Hedowin, how to find what you guys are doing, maybe even learn from what you guys are doing, where can they find a little bit more? Just hedowin.com?
Yeah, and on our social media at Hedowin Official.
Amazing. Well, again, thank you guys. And
thank you.
We could talk about. Hopefully, we'll get you on a second episode maybe a year from now.
And we need 2 hours.
That's exactly.
It was really nice talking to you. Thank you.
If you want to learn even more about how you can start your own fashion brand, make sure you follow me on YouTube at Esteban Julian. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Future of Fashion Business. Make sure you subscribe to listen to our future episodes.